You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, hey, welcome to The Crossover with me, Joe R. Lucas, brought to you by the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Throughout this season, this is where I'll bring you exclusive interviews with your favorite coaches, players, and legends. Each episode, I'll be getting down and dirty with some very special guests as I try to find out what life is like on and off the court for Europe's elite. Make sure to stay tuned in because no subject is out of bounds. Oh yes, we're back again with another episode of The Crossover. I'm Joe R. Lucas, your host, and today is quite a day as I get to sit down with one of the most versatile players in the EuroLeague, a guy that just turned 26 years old, and not only is he making an impact on the court, but more impressively, off the court. Anthony Gill, welcome to The Crossover, my man.
I appreciate you having me here. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited.
Good. That's good. That's a good start right there. Well, before we start, I want you to know I got your number, all right? So I got you scattered out, and if you start telling me that you got, like, double-headed Siamese cats and you're a magician in the offseason, I'm cutting the interview right off the bat, man. You got a bad reputation for being a prankster, or a good one.
Well, that's what I say. I never tell anybody my tricks. You know, I always keep something up my sleeve, and I always keep everybody on their toes.
So. Yeah, well, if something crazy comes up, I'm not going for it, man. I'm 53, man. I got experience on my side. All right, I know we're not boys yet, but we will be by the end of the show. So I know I'll be able to call you AG by the end of the show.
Right.
We'll figure it out as we go. Seems that everybody calls you that. Is that your...
Well, back home, everybody calls me AG. A couple guys on the team here call me AG. A lot of the Americans, they
what about the Russian guys? Can they get it?
They got different names for me. A lot of them call me Tony, which no one ever calls me Tony. A lot of them call me Antonov.
Antonov, there you go.
That's your Russian name.
There you go.
Antonov Gilov.
Antonov Gilov, there you go.
My Russian name.
You know, I'm commentating in games. I'll be using that one.
You can just call me AG. I'll be AG, okay with it.
All right, good. Before I get to the serious part of the podcast, I got to say, everything I've read, everything I've seen, everybody speaks so highly of you, man. It's like I'm already impressed by you. We haven't started this thing. So now it's your turn to let the listeners kind of inside of what you've been through. Let's go back and start early. You went to high school. You were born and raised in Charlotte?
No, I'm born in High Point, North Carolina. So it's
High Point, okay.
An hour and a half away from Charlotte.
Right, I know.
We moved there. When I was 12 to Charlotte.
I know the area. I dated a girl in Charlotte, and I was like always back and forth. Yeah. I love the Charlotte area.
Yeah, for sure.
It's crazy how much it's grown over
the
years, too.
It's brand new. Everything is brand new.
It's crazy.
It's got a crazy environment.
But I feel like there's no room for it to grow anymore, and it just keeps going.
That's what I'm thinking. They keep expanding. Every year there's something new. There's a new apartment complex or something.
So you started high school, right?
So I went to one year of middle school, and then right away I went to high school.
And I mean, you killed it in high school. I mean, you had a great four years.
I had a great time. I had a great coach who put me in great position. So
that's so much of the key in life. Yeah, in basketball, is like having the right person, the right coach, the right team,
exactly.
The right teammates. Also,
exactly.
Now you got two brothers,
Two sisters and two brothers.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were four.
No, there's five of us.
Oh, there's five.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's not a big family, but it's relatively big for these days, but it just got bigger on
me. Yeah.
I thought you were just four.
Yeah, we just added one.
Where you fit in?
I'm in the middle.
You're right in the middle.
I was in the middle until we had two more little ones. So we have a 7 and an 8-year-old too as well. My dad has a 7 and an 8-year-old.
Really?
And then, I was in the middle prior to that.
Okay, so your dad's in another marriage. So he brought two more kids into your life.
Exactly.
And, man.
Yeah, and then he changed it up on us, and it was basically like I was raising two kids of my own. But
there's nothing wrong with that. That's giving you practice for what you got now, right?
Right, exactly.
Exactly. There you go. We'll get into that as we go on. I read that you were born with some sort of nerve damage and paralysis in one side of your face.
Right. My right side of my body. Yeah, so
the whole body, your whole body.
The whole body, yeah. The whole right side of my body, I couldn't move when I was
at birth.
At birth, yeah. This is just what my mom tells me.
But you had no recollection of it.
Well, honestly, until I got into high school, my right eyebrow was raised like a little bit higher, and I couldn't like really put it down. So, I mean, luckily, it kind of went away. But
it's like you got Botox, right?
Yeah,
you
always looking surprised on the right side. But
it's never affected you like on the court and athletically or anything like that?
Not that I can. Probably some doctor would tell me somewhere down the line that it was.
Of course.
Affects me, but no, I'm good.
That's because I want to make more money.
Yeah, exactly. exactly.
How did you get into basketball early? Or were you in other sports also?
Football and basketball. My dad.
Okay, let's clarify this. Real football.
American football.
There you go.
Yeah. Sunday football.
Pads and helmets.
Yeah, exactly.
And there you go.
And basketball. My dad played football and basketball in college.
Okay.
And you know, he kind of raised me to do the same. And but in high school, I kept getting hurt playing American football. So kind of decided to just stick with basketball. You know, it was a lot safer.
You still follow American football out here while you're out here?
Yeah. Carolina Panthers is my team.
That's a great stadium to go watch a game.
Man,
I've been to a few games.
I love it.
I was there when they played the Cardinals in the NFC Championship.
Yeah.
It was a great game.
Great atmosphere, man.
It's unbelievable.
Everybody jumped on the Panthers bandwagon. And
yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Just the tailgating and all the bars around the, It's nothing like having the stadium in the center of town.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Because everything's around it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like a small city. And you have that stadium, it's pretty cool. But I usually do this part of the interview later on with most people, but I thought it was important to jump into it kind of early with you. I'm trying to figure out exactly how you're so damn together as such a young guy at 26 years old. So I like to play like some number games.
Yeah.
All right, every now and then. I'm only gonna do it once in this interview. I give you a number, you tell me the first thing that comes to your mind. All right? You ready?
Yep.
13.
My mom.
That's your mom, right?
Yeah, the day she got breast cancer changed our lives, my whole family, and we all got the tattoos, and it represents her, man. For me, it's a huge number. It's something I can't just let go. You know, whenever I don't get to have 13 on the team, I get kind of bummed, but, you know, that number is big for me.
How many times has that happened where you couldn't get the number?
Well, I've only been professional 3 years, but my first year on the team I was in Turkey, a guy already had it, and his dad was number 13 or something like that, so
man.
I wasn't able to get it, yeah. So it was one sob story against another sob story.
There you
story,
go. So. And he was the homeboy, so
yeah,
he
exactly,
didn't get that one from
exactly.
How important is, I mean, you know, I saw your facial expression, and you got the tattoo on your shoulder. Does the whole family have the tattoo? Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah, everyone has a tattoo. Yeah.
So just an important number because it represents what your mom not only was diagnosed with on that 13th day of whatever month it was, but also the fight that she had to go through.
It was tough for us, you know. But to see the strength that she had through all that, you know, it kind of just represents the way that I play now. You know, I give everything I have in every play that I have because I've seen my mom give everything she had every day of her life, fighting for her life. And
what kind of cancer was it?
Breast cancer.
It was breast cancer.
She had it twice. That's why I say it's just a moment in our life that just really, you know, kind of changed the dynamics of our team. I mean, of our family a lot. So,
how long was the battle that she had, and more importantly, how's she doing today?
Yeah, so it was about a year the first time.
So after the first year, y'all were like, it's
yeah,
over.
like we're
she
really
went
happy
into remission
for you. Yeah.
And everything's fine, and you guys had a big party.
Yeah, and then she got it back. You know,
how long after that?
About a year and a half, 2 years. So it was you know, it was tough, you know, because you were just wondering like why is this happening. You know, but I'm a guy of big faith, and I believe everything happens for a reason. So, you know, it was just one of those things we took in stride, and we supported her, and she was just as strong the second time as she was the first time.
And that, I'm assuming that gave y'all, the kids in the family, a lot of strength also far as, like, fighting things in life. Because you've been through, I mean, we're going to go through it all. You've been through a lot.
This
has been easy for you.
This, you know, people get too overwhelmed on this basketball thing, you know, and it's just a job that I have to do, you know, but to watch my mom fight for her life is like, that puts things in real perspective. You know, what I go through on a daily basis is nothing compared to what she goes through. So
I watched my dad go through it for 3 years before he passed away. And it's so hard, man, to see. And, you know, I went through to the fact where my dad just was depleted as a human being. You know, I always saw him up on this pedestal, you know, and then the worst thing that could possibly happen. And it's just tough battle. But, and now you married your high school sweetheart. Her name's Jenna, right?
Jenna,
you got that right. You got the beautiful little girl to go with her.
Man.
That's beautiful. You seem like, I was kind of stalking you a little bit on Instagram,
yeah.
Yeah, to pick up some stuff on you. And I saw one picture of one of your boys swinging a golf club. That was pretty funny, man. It looked like Charles Barkley for a minute. I was like, that's not Barkley. Who else can swing like that?
We have no parts on the golf. We should not be on the golf course at all. We should not be out there.
That's pretty funny. But is that where kind of the dedication to your family comes from? Do you attribute that to like what your mom went through and the way it kept your family together and watching your mom not only fight but beat cancer twice?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big role. You know, my dad has a big role in it too. You know, even though they're divorced, my family always just, you know, they always put in my brain that my mom is the most important thing, my dad is the most important thing, family is the most important thing. And for me, I want to love my family as the best I can, you know. And I have a, like you said, I have a wife and a daughter now, and we have another child on the way. And you know, just for me, I just want to give love to as many people as I can, and I want my family to show that same love to everyone that they can. And I want them to feel daily the love that I have for them. And I got that from my family growing up, you know. I always just saw them loving each other, loving me, and it's just something that I want to do the same to my family. So
it's amazing that when you sit back and you think about it, it's like values come from yeah, family.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, you always got that, everyone's got that black sheep they call in the family every now and then.
Yeah.
I don't know if y'all got one. I won't get into that, but it's just the, you know, the personal values that you get from your mom and dad is what transmitted later on to your kids.
Right.
You know, even through good times, bad times, mm-hmm. through anything. But is it true that she came up to you to try to hook you up with her sister?
Man.
At high school, is that a true story? Because I'm thinking Thanksgiving dinner is a little complicated that way.
I mean, what can I say? I mean, I'm a good-looking guy, you know. I know this. But, you know, that's true. I mean, her sister wanted to know who I was, you know, but then she kind of caught my eye, so.
But you never dated her sister first, did you?
No. There's nothing like that going on. But she approached me, and then I made my moves on Facebook back then, and
I mean, that's just I'm 53, man. You know, I'm not, you know, I saw that. I'm like, he hit on her. He made his moves on Facebook.
Yeah,
come on, man. What? Come on.
Hey, it's easy. If I get let down, you know, I just,
no
just keep
knows,
it moving.
Sorry.
No, unless she prints out our conversation, then we're gonna keep it moving.
Man, I'm telling you, man. Facebook, text messages, man. WhatsApp, all that stuff has just changed. It's changed our rap. And right after school was done, you made it official. Your Virginia team that we'll get into now lost in what was it, the Sweet 16 there?
Elite Eight.
The Elite Eight,
yeah.
Okay. And then you went right in, got married.
Yeah.
Like, so as soon as it was done.
The plan was to win the national championship and then get married 2 days later. But, of course, we lost. We kind of blew the game. We were up 16 and lost.
I remember that game, too.
Yeah. So, but, you know, we ended up getting married 8 days later. Best day of my life, man. It changed everything for me.
Wait. Don't say that yet.
Hey,
There's another day coming up here in a minute.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But it was a great day, man. It's just something that I look forward to. We've been together for 10 years, my wife and I, and I've been looking forward to it since probably the day I met her. And I kind of knew from the day I met her, even though I was so young, I kind of knew that this is who I want to be with, and I got my wish.
It's... I think I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, but I think it's the moment. It's so hard to do that as an athlete.
Mm.
It's so hard to be with the high school sweetheart.
Right.
Go through four. She didn't go to college with you when you guys went off to college. Okay, so you guys had that separation time there, and then you turn pro, and then you've been moving back and forth as a pro. Also, it's so hard to maintain that relationship and fulfill that relationship. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, now you guys are together, you said 10 years.
Yeah.
You decided to get married right after after the Final Four is what the plan was.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you got through all those times.
Mm-hmm.
What do you count that as? I mean, just dedication from both of you?
I think it goes back to family, you know, the way I was raised, you know, and it goes to who I am as a person. You know, I'm not one to... You know, if I know what I want, I go after it, you know, and I don't let anything sidetrack me from achieving my goal.
Now, that's not making your sister-in-law feel very good.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully she won't be listening to this one, but you know, and it's just, honestly, it's just like one of those things where there's temptations all over the world, and if I know I have something good, I'm just going to stick to that, you know, and it's hard, you know. We were in college, and we weren't together, and then professionally, I'm always traveling, but I know what I have at home, and I'm thankful for it, and I wouldn't do anything to jeopardize that.
That's great. How far away were you in college?
We were a six-hour drive.
Okay.
Yeah,
it's doable.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
It's doable.
So, yeah.
But I mean, if you have time, it's doable.
Well,
but
I never
University
drove.
Of Virginia,
she
you never
drove.
Have time.
Yeah. She drove most of the time because I was always at practice or something.
Yeah, you better be dedicated during that. And now you guys brought into this world Andy Rain?
Andy Rain, yeah.
Andy Rain. That's a great name. Where'd that name come from? And it's
A-N-D-I. A-N-D-I. So her name is Alexandria. She's named after her mom. That's her mom's middle name. And Andy was just a name that my wife fell in love with, and, you know, it kind of flowed, Rain kind of flowed with it. And, also my mom's name is Sandy, so we kind of just took the S off and named it Andy.
There you go.
Just kind of honoring my mom. But, you know, it's just, that was definitely a life-changing event for me. I wasn't there for the actual birth, but 6 hours later, I got on a flight to go back to America from Kimke. It's definitely life-changing.
Oh, so you were, it was just last year? You were here then?
Yeah, so it was a crazy story. We were headed to Lithuania, like stepping on the bus to get on a flight.
Oh,
to,
I heard this. I heard to, about yeah, that. Yeah.
To go to Lithuania. My wife called me while I'm in the locker room, like packing all my stuff up to go to Lithuania. And she's like, you need to get here. And she's like, my water broke and it's time. Like, and I like went to coach. I was like, coach, I got to go. And, you know, coach is great, man. He's such a family guy and he's such an honorable guy. So, you know, it was easy for him to say, yeah. And he let me go and I got to see my daughter and my wife. And it was crazy, man. It was
it's nuts when, it's, you, man, when you first see that little baby there. Man, isn't it crazy?
It is wild. It's like, that's I did this and now I gotta take care of it. It's
just, I gotta talk good about little girls because I got one that's 25 years old.
And, oh, man.
And every time I do one of these and someone talks about their daughter, I say something bad about her. So she she got mad at me today. She's like, you better stop talking bad about me.
Yeah, you better. You're going to be a hot water.
But you'll see what they're like when they're 25, yeah. Man. It's not as cute sometimes. Let's go back to Charlotte a little bit. Great 4 years, recruited by colleges. Mm-hmm. You started your freshman year at South Carolina.
Yeah.
You choose them over some big teams.
Yeah.
Who else was in the run? You had Virginia.
Well, so I committed really early. So my sophomore year of high school, I committed.
Oh, you already committed then?
Yeah. So
okay.
I kind of got it out the way, honestly. It was a lot of pressure from a lot of people in my family. A lot of the coaching staff at South Carolina was the only visit I went on unofficially. And I kind of just said, you know what? Okay, I'll come. That was one of the most not thought through moments of my life, but, you know, it ended up being very beneficial for me, you know, because I had to transfer and I sat out that year and right. It was very beneficial for me.
I mean, you walked into the freshman and do what most one and done guys do nowadays, man. You played right off the bat. Right. You 31 games played, 26 games you started. You got 25 minutes a game, yeah. 8 points, 4 rebounds. You shot 60% from the floor. I mean, as a freshman, not too many people get to do that unless you're going straight to the NBA.
After, right.
You know, it seems like you made that, even though you made it 2 years before, it seems like you made that right decision as far as for playing time is concerned.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, I was just, as far as long run goes, it wasn't the right decision for me. I wasn't ready yet to be, you know, put in that forefront. You know, the coach gave me a lot of minutes, and I had no idea what my body was doing. I had no idea, like, who I was as a player, anything
hard,
like that.
It's hard, man. It's a big change.
So that's why I say that 1 year that I had when I transferred out, it was great for me to learn who I was, get acclimated to my body, you know, because I had no idea what I was doing as any kind of athlete or anything. But it was a blessing in disguise, really, for me to go to South Carolina and then transfer.
So 2-14.
Yeah.
10-21 overall, difficult season.
Yeah.
And the school decides to fire the coach that brought you in.
Mm.
Now, as I'm doing my research and I'm doing my work for this interview, I'm thinking, you're in your mind, you're like, damn, man, this guy brought me in. He's my boy. He played me the whole time. But now what you're telling me changes my perspective a little bit.
No, Coach Horn is a great guy.
I'm not saying nothing about Coach. I'm saying about the fact that it was kind of an opening of the door for you to leave because,
right.
According to what I read, the school came to you and they gave you permission to seek a transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So you transferred based on your own personal decision when it's all done and said.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was an awkward position because the coach that I did want to play for, he was gone. He recruited me there and everything like that.
Right.
But, you know, for me, it was a great moment, honestly. You know, they had a new coach coming in, and that transitional period was going to be possibly another losing season.
Right.
And me, I'm a competitor. I want to win games, and I knew I wanted to put myself in the best position to be successful every year, so I had to make that change.
And I understand. I'm sure you're going to be on my side on this, but what I can't understand is that you get recruited by a team. You sign a scholarship, even though it was 2 years beforehand. The coach gets fired that brought you in.
Mm.
They give you permission to leave, and then you have to redshirt a year. You actually have to sit out a full season.
It's a lot of things I don't agree with what goes on in college basketball.
It's crazy.
And, that's probably the biggest thing is outside of being compensated or anything like that. But, you know, those guys can move freely around whatever team they want to get paid.
The coaches, yeah.
Yeah, the coaches. They move freely. They get paid millions of dollars.
And they get their money when they leave
from
the team.
Yeah.
And then they go get paid another side.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying nothing about the coach. Get your money while you can.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what this world's all about.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But, you know, it just puts the players in a bad position, you know, because a new coach comes in what if he doesn't like your style of game? Right. He doesn't like you as a person. Then you're sitting on the bench, and it kind of messes up your whole trajectory of your career. And I think that's one of those things that's kind of messed up about college basketball, but it's part of it.
That's another podcast, yeah, exactly. Man. That's,
we can talk about that one later.
Yeah, that's for another show. But from there, you get Ohio State chasing you down. You got North Carolina chasing you down, and you choose Virginia.
Yeah.
Why Virginia? I mean, I love Virginia. I love what y'all did. Mm. I love the team, but it doesn't seem like your type of game.
Right.
I would have said North Carolina for you, more up-tempo,
right.
You know, athletic, where Virginia was just like, boom, defense. If we could win and stop the team from scoring 50, you know, we're good.
Yeah, that's just one of those things where it was kind of more of a man decision. You know, as a man, Coach Bennett is a great person. Mm-hmm. Richard McKay, who was our assistant coach at the time, Virginia, was a great person. And I knew that I had to grow as a man, and that decision right there to go to Virginia was solely based off of that. You know, I could have went to North Carolina, I could have went to Ohio State and done great, had great numbers or anything like that. But, you know, long run, I think it was a good decision for me to go to Virginia. You know, they had the same principles, the same belief system I have is work hard for everything you have. Nothing's handed to you. And that's what we did every game. You know, we showed it on defense. You know, it was
crazy,
a situation where you're not going to score points. And we prided ourselves on that. You know, we had a game where a Division I team scored 26 points.
I know. And I was going to bring that up.
Right? Yeah, it's like something that, you know, it's crazy that Coach Bennett can get everybody to believe in something like that. You know, everybody comes into college thinking, I need to score points. I need to go to the NBA. Coach Bennett flips your whole mindset. You know, of course you still want to be successful, go to the NBA and everything like that, but he flips your whole mindset to say, you know, we're not going to score, we're going to play defense, and we're going to get good shots. So
how hard are those practices? Because if you're playing D that hard in a game,
yeah,
a practice has got to be even more difficult sometimes.
It's intense, you know, and it's kind of a mature system that they have there. It's not so much, you know, running around with a chicken with your head cut off. It's more... You know, we're paying attention to the detail. We're going hard at each possession that we have on defense, and we're trying to get stops in practice. You know, we it's funny because, you know, we rarely play games where we were actually keeping real score. It was, we're going to keep score of how many stops we get. First person to seven stops wins the game. And that's what we did, and it pays off for him. You know, he's always successful. He's always now, for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, they've been top 10 every year, top 25. Crazy. So it's
in the same game plan.
Same
too. It
game
hasn't
plan.
Changed.
Yeah.
People can't catch on to it.
Yeah, you know? They run the same offense and the same defense every single game for years, and nothing's gonna change about it.
It's just like what you said before. You know, it's kind of like, if it's not broken, don't fix
exactly.
it. Right? Just keep going.
Exactly.
And there you grew in Virginia. You grew, and your numbers grew with it every year. Mm-hmm. I mean, your numbers got better and better. Your time on the floor got better. Your percentages got better. Yeah. Was that all part of the experience for you? Was it part of the maturation, the growing up, the becoming a man, like you said? You want to go there and become a man. Has that had something to do with the numbers?
Yeah, of course. I mean, especially, you know, getting used to the system and everything, asking what Coach Ben is asking for me, it definitely helped having that time there. You know, that wasn't a system where we're going to score a bunch of points. But I was able to learn how to score within that system. And it's the same kind of like what we're going through here at Kimke. You know, it's a difficult situation with the team that we have and the guys that we have on the team, on the roster. But, you know, you have to find a way to be successful throughout that. And that's just what I do my whole career.
One of the things I since I started doing this, if I find someone that went to school for 4 years and studied for 4 years and went to college for it, one of my favorite questions is, what was that last game like, man? Who was it against? You said it was
Syracuse.
It was against Syracuse.
In the Elite Eight, yeah.
Do you remember the feeling in the locker room afterwards, man, what it was like to take that uniform off for the last time?
It was, you know, I had two different feelings. You know, it was, man, I'm going to miss these guys who I've spent so much time with. You know, the freshmen that we bring in and that you kind of like raise up and to teach them the new system and everything like that. You're going to miss those guys. But then you're like, all right, well, it's time to go on and move to the next chapter. And it's scary. Like, you don't know what's going on, especially for a guy in my position. You know, it's like, I don't know if I'm going to go to the NBA. I had no idea what overseas basketball was even about.
Right.
So I'm just, like, up in the air. Like, I'm not a top 10 guy. I don't know what's going to happen next. And I just had to kind of just put my head down and work. So
You didn't have too much time to think about it. You had a wedding in a few days.
Yeah, yeah. That you, also was on my mind.
You couldn't be sad for too long.
Yeah, it was a pretty stressful time that time, you know, just wondering what's going on, about to get married. That the marriage really helped me out a lot, though. You know, she kind of kept me grounded throughout the whole process.
You didn't do much to plan that marriage, from what I understand.
No. I just sat back. You know, I went to the cake test, the cake testing.
That's all right. You see,
that was the best part of the whole day. You know, and then on the wedding night, we didn't get any cake that like that during the wedding, but
you got enough the day before, right? A couple of days before.
Yeah, I was good.
and did you cry after that last game? Were there tears of like sadness? It was just over. It's a crazy feeling, man. I thought I was going to die because I didn't know where I was going either. Yeah. I had no idea.
Honestly, I think I teared up most when I just saw the guys that I saw I was going to leave behind. You know, a lot of those guys were in my wedding. And it's just something that's like, man, like I'm not going to have these guys anymore. Like daily in my life, right. You know, you wake up.
It's your family.
Yeah. I had five roommates with me. So we had three apartments. We knocked down the walls and made one big apartment, and all those guys were in my wedding. And it's just something like, man, I'm not gonna wake up in the morning and they're yelling or something, or like it's just
life's different.
Yeah,
now,
it's just different life. You know, I realized right then that was a growing up time for me, and it was a moving on time.
Did you get your degree?
Yes,
anthropology.
Anthropology, yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to show my idiot side a little bit. You know, I mean, I was a typical basketball player that went for the business management,
right?
You know, and you get the guys that do the marketing, the liberal arts, and stuff. What makes you go for anthropology, man? I mean,
Well, for me, I love people. I love talking to people, and anthropology is the study of cultures and different and humans and everything like that. So, you know, I knew that I wanted to do something. Originally, I wanted to do something in the hotel business. You know, get involved with hotels and. You know, hotels, you always see different people in and out every day. But for me, the biggest thing was just learning how people think, you know.
Isn't that the hospitality business?
Yeah,
hospitality.
So in South Carolina, I was in hospitality.
Okay, in South Carolina. Okay, there you go.
All right. So then I went to Virginia and I changed it up. And then my last year, my fifth year, I ended up taking a lot of business courses, you know, just to try to get that the business side of it all. No, but for me, I just want to learn how people think, you know, just learn how to accept people and their cultures. And it really helped me, you know, especially coming overseas and living this life overseas that, you know, it can be a rude awakening for a lot of guys. And
we're going to get into that one, too.
Yeah, for sure.
I got that one coming for you because I've been through it. We've all been through it.
Yeah, for sure.
So at this point, you're eligible for the draft, 2016 draft, but you're not selected.
Yeah.
Was it a dream of yours to be drafted?
Yeah, I think it's a dream for everybody growing up.
Every kid is.
Yeah, like it's just like I want to hear my name called, you know. And you know, in my position, it was honestly better for me not to get my name called, you know, because I probably would have been somewhere in the 50s, and they would have just threw me anywhere, and I would have just been lost in the shuffle. But you know, for me, I had 19 workouts with the NBA teams, and it was a long process, man. It was just from city to city, constantly working out. And
that's, you know, on your own dime?
No.
Oh, the teams paid for it. Okay. Yeah. Right.
The teams paid for it. If that was the case, I wasn't going anywhere. I was not
going to Charlotte.
Charlotte was right down the street. I'd take the bus down there. But that was like, it was a process, man. And the whole time, teams promising you, you know, we'll pick you here. And you know, you always get your hopes up, and then on the day that comes.
So the 19 tryouts were pre-draft.
Pre-draft workouts.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So
man, that wasn't even in free agency. I thought you meant after the draft in free agency.
No. Pre-draft workout. So it's just a.
Well, that's a short period of time. You just got married, also.
Yeah. So just got married.
No honeymoon.
No. We actually, our honeymoon was kind of like, our agency is based out of New York, so our agency put us up in New York, and that was like our home base for those 2 months, and we were flying from city to city from there. So.
And your wife is going with you?
No.
No, okay.
It would be a quick turnaround. Like some days I'll fly that morning and come back that night. So,
That's tiring too, man. You're not getting my best after, you know, 3-4 hours of flight time.
Some teams are good about it. You know, some teams not trying to kill you, but some teams are just like, we're going to see what you got, and they try to really kill you out there.
So after all this, you get your first deal, I guess, with a German team.
Yeah.
And you go over there, and I've never been to a German doctor in my life, man, so I can't judge. I can't say anything bad about German doctors. I don't want to get in trouble on this program, but I've seen you play almost 2 years now. You're a complete freak, athletic freak. You can do anything on the court. How is it, that they say that you failed the physical and you weren't fit to play.
Man, it was a funky situation, man. They brought me in. I did all the tests, like the physical fitness tests. Like literally, the strength coach was like, "Man, you broke every single record that we've had here."
That's what I was
like for the last 10 years, and I'm like, "Yeah, I'm feeling good." And then we had one practice that night. Then the next day, they're like, "Hey, don't come to practice." Like, and I'm like, "Okay, why?" And then they're like, "Well, there's something that we saw in some of your X-rays or something like that." They told me it was something in my foot or something like that. They said, "We don't think you're gonna like make it through the whole season." And then, sure enough, they cut me, and I was home 5 days later, and then I was looking for a new job. But I went back to America, and I was like, I showed them the same exact, like, things that the doctors were looking at in Germany, and I went to 5 different doctors. Like
in the States.
The best. Nothing but, the best doctors in the States, like foot doctors, type specialists.
Because you got to be thinking, like, really?
Even though you
could say they're crazy,
yeah,
you might be done in your mind.
Yeah, and so then, like, I took him to the air. I was like, "Well, we don't see it, but you know, every doctor is different, so they must have had a different kind of game plan going on."
It was kind of like just going to the basket and getting denied at the rim at that point. You know, you get over to Germany, you're all ready to like show your stuff in Europe and Germany, move around, and they just what did that? I talk to kids all the time, young kids, and I talk about, you know, disappointments in life. And, you know, especially in basketball, your best game doesn't mean you're a great player, and your worst game doesn't mean you're the worst player. You know, keeping even, you know, everybody's going to have a good day, bad day. How did you deal with that, man? Because that's your first – it's not like you're sitting on 3 years of playing experience. You got money put away.
Yeah.
And you got your future family taken care of a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden you go and boom, you just kick right back in 5 days.
It was a lot of different emotions. It was – first off, we had a going away party for me. Everybody was like, you know, you're leaving. Like, there's like 100 people there. Like, people give me German books, how to speak German. Then 5 days later, I'm home, and it's like, this is my.
You didn't want to see anybody, did you?
Man, I didn't want to see anybody. I was like, it was funny because like we just had the party, and then I saw somebody who didn't know I was back, and they were like, "What are you doing?" Like, like, just had a party. Just had a party. Threw you guys off a little bit. No, but it was tough. Like, I didn't know where I was going to be. Like, I thought I was going to be in Germany for that whole year. I thought I was going to get my career started. But it was a rude awakening for me. It was like, this team didn't want you. And it really introduced me to European basketball really early. You know, just how up and down it can be sometimes. And, you know, the instability of it all. And just depending on the team. But I got a good situation after that, so.
I try to like put myself in everybody's position, you know, and think the way I would think.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought process is I'm flying over to Germany. I got this nervous excitement about, man, this is it. This is the beginning. This is what people have been telling me about, you know.
Right.
This is seize the day. It's your opportunity. And then flying back, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Can't even imagine what.
Man, it was a lot. Like, especially because I had my wife with me, you know, and we were like.
Oh, so you guys flew to Germany together.
Yeah, we were there together. So those five days, it was crazy. We went to IKEA. We spent some of our wedding money. So like the only money we had was wedding money.
No, we didn't.
And we spent some of our wedding money, like most of it for the apartment that we had. And then 5 days later, like,
no,
I was gone. So that's why, lesson learned, I don't buy anything until the first paycheck comes in. Now,
there you go.
So I'm kind of smart about it.
That's
now.
Finance 101,
exactly.
Right there, especially over here in Europe.
Exactly.
You gotta be careful. So then you get the offer in Turkey. You got this. Now you got a flight, a little longer flight.
Yeah.
Over the big pond, and now what are you thinking?
Man, I was nervous. I was like, okay, they're gonna send me back home, like, and then I want to be out without a job again. So that's another situation where I was like, I'm not spending any money until I know that I'm actually on this team. And
give me my paycheck.
Yeah, and there was a lot of turmoil going on in Turkey at the time too.
Right.
I mean, I don't know about what's going on now, but there was a lot of stuff going on at the time. So my family was nervous for me to go there, and my wife wasn't so much nervous. You know, we were kind of excited just to go through that whole experience together. But it was a blessing, though. You know, that really jump-started my career, and it really helped me out a lot. You know, my coach, Trifa, he really put me in a great position to be successful, and it worked out great.
Back in 88, I was forced. I came over here, and I sounds bad when I say I was forced to adapt to the European lifestyle. What do you feel as an American coming over to Turkey, in a sense, it was the most difficult life transition for you to make?
I don't know. I can't just put my finger on one thing. It's just
all of it was tough.
It just all kind of hits you at one time. You know, the first night I arrived in Turkey, they put me in this, like, the guy picked me up from the airport, spoke no English. So I had no idea what I was looking for, no idea what was going on. Like, right. I had no idea where I was going. Took me to a hotel that was like the size of this table right here. And
was your wife there with you too?
So that's made it a lot easier for me.
So, like, she's a glutton for punishment. She wanted to take her.
She's there for everything that I go through.
It's good to have her by your side.
For sure. And then, like, nobody speaks English, so you don't know what to expect. You don't know where to eat. Like, for a first-time guy, and especially coming out of college, you don't have guys who have gone overseas before or played in that city, so they can kind of help you out and give you kind of, like, tips on to how to move around. But, you know, it's different. You know, culture is 100% different. You know, there's things that are acceptable back home that aren't acceptable over here, and it's just different. So you have to learn how to adapt to that. And luckily, my anthropology degree came in handy.
I was just gonna say, thank God for an anthropology degree.
You know, I learned a lot about these different cultures while I was in school, so I was able to adapt pretty quickly.
I missed Oreo cookies, man. When I was over there, when my first time in Spain, there was none to be found, man. It was crazy. I was here for, I think, 5-6 years before I got a contact at the embassy in Madrid. And then they started shoving like a drug dealer, you know, like throwing me Oreo cookies every night.
You know, I think about when, like, your time would be Netflix wasn't around.
Oh, nothing.
So, like, what were you guys doing?
I bought a satellite TV thing, okay? This is no lie. I'm not even like hyping this up. I bought a satellite that must have been like 10 feet around. I put on top of a house. This is my second year because I had no TV the first year. And for me to get from CNN International, okay, I put in like whatever, I saw Sky Sports to CNN International. It took 45 seconds from my satellite. So I'd go get a beer, you know what I mean? Make some nachos and come back and sit down. And then I look at Sky Sports would come on and be like, you know, cricket on.
Yeah,
I'd be like,
you gotta wait again. You gotta change the channel again.
There's nothing. There's no Netflix. Hardly anybody spoke in English. Yeah. You know, the games weren't in English. So it was like, yeah, one person translating to you. So it was difficult, man.
That's tough. And
I love to talk to people about it because regardless of the fact that your life is easier now, as far as being able to contact family, it doesn't make it that the adaptation process isn't that much easier. You just get to contact your family more. That's it. Mm-hmm. You still got to go through. And I say this all the time because people take it personal here. But the European guys that go over to States, they go through the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it may be an easier adaptation, but for some of them, it's difficult because it's just not the same as what they're used to. But my big question is, you played some crazy games. I mean, Cameron Indoor, which I think now is Coach K's building, right? Is it called Coach K's building?
Oh, did they change it? I think it's Coach K Court. I don't know.
Coach K's Court, something like that, I mean, you've never played a game in Europe before. Your first game in Europe was in Turkey. What about the fans and the passion and
it's different, man. It's still to this day.
Were you scared?
No, I wasn't scared. It was just kind of like a shock. Like, you know how you say culture shock? Like, that was like a huge shock. You know, you go, especially the team I was on, our home gym, we didn't have a locker room that we had like a caller on. Our gym was shared with the city. So we had the volleyball teams in there, every kind of men's league in there. So, but the fans were unbelievable. You know, they were still like, we weren't even a top team. We were like coming into the season. They expect us to finish last in the polls. And they were there the first game of the season.
I like that in the polls. You still got college on your mind.
Oh, yeah. In the rankings. But we were they were there and they were going crazy. And then I go to some games, like we played Besiktas and they were like, the gym was packed with smoke, cigarette smoke. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, I'm thinking the ref is going to stop the game, like tell this person to stop smoking or this person. No, it's not. That's not the case.
And the flares, the flares and everything. It's crazy.
We played a preseason game this year at Panathinaikos, and they set the flares off, and they were honoring the guy, the president.
Yeah.
And then they set a flare off, and then it caught fire on the on one of the little signs that they had. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be one of those tragic 30 for 30 stories, and I'm going to be involved in it. This is not going to be good, but it's different.
No, you got the 30-30 out. You got to the crossover, so you're fine. You had a good season. I even saw you started sneaking in three-pointers.
Yeah.
There was a while you weren't shooting three. You got 43 three-pointers in that season, knocked down 20. It's not bad, 46, 47%.
Mm-hmm.
You only had 31 shot for 4 years of college. Now, you had 28 in South Carolina and only three after that. Coach Holland's like...
No, it was different.
You inside, boy.
Yeah. Nobody at Virginia shoots threes as a big man. So we were all just in the dunk spot, dunking the ball and making post moves. But, you know, it was good for me to be in Garrison my first year in Turkey. The coach really trusted me, and he knew I could shoot the ball, so he allowed me to do that. So
now, last year you got in 41 threes, fairly well. Not as good as the percentage before, but this year you're even at a higher pace right now as far as jacking up threes. You get about three a game at this point. And hey, at 47%, you better be shooting them.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's what this team needs from me, so that's what I do. You know?
Tough to get a three with Alexi around.
I just fall in line, man. He's the guy on the team, so I just stand in the corner and shoot the threes. That's what I do.
Hey, spot up, man. That's
exactly.
A good shot.
Exactly. Good shot.
So now we're obviously in Kimki and Moscow. The first thing, I mean, you brought up in North Carolina all the time, went to South Carolina, went to Virginia. I mean, I laughed when I saw a picture of you on your Instagram, man. It must have been the biggest coat I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's cold, man.
That was where'd you get that coat from? I don't even know if you call that a coat.
Man, I found that coat in the mall at some random store.
You didn't find that in Virginia, I can tell you that.
No, not for sure. Not for sure. I'm wearing three different hoodies underneath it, and it's cold, man. I walk out sometimes outside and my ears start burning.
Oh yeah.
And my nose starts burning, and I'm just like, what am I doing? Like, what's my life come to? Like,
I'm from upstate New York, man. I lived there.
Oh, man.
I know exactly what it's like. I don't mind cold weather, but I need some sunshine. That snow is
last tough. Year in December, we had 6 minutes of sunlight the whole December in Moscow.
The whole month. 6 minutes.
Yeah. Like the total month.
You remember what you did during those 6 minutes? Well, probably in the gym, right?
Honestly, I was probably in another country and
there you go.
We weren't live. We wouldn't see the sun, so.
Last season was an amazing season, though, for you guys. I mean, you guys pretty much fought tooth and nail throughout the whole season. You had some great games, had some difficult games, and you got that first year league win in the playoff for the club. And the worst part about you get in eighth place, you got to play your crosstown rival in Cheska, and you guys lost three of the four. You won one by a total of 9 points.
Yeah.
What are y'all thinking at that point?
Well, I love playing them, you know, because it's a rivalry between us and them. And, you know, so who's going to be the best Russian team? And, you know, they always are on top. They win the championship every year. So last year we played them 10 times, and we've only beat them in the regular season. We only beat them one time the whole time. So it's difficult, you know, but everyone, you know, says, oh, we got to play Cheska or whatever. I look forward to it. You know, I kind of, you know, I don't want to say circle it on the schedule, but I want to play the best in every game that we come out and play. I want to play against the best team out there. So it was them last year that they were number one. We were eight. So it was great for me. You know, I wanted to be out there on that court. And
no travel, too.
Yeah.
that works out good, too,
for you to see the family. But I want to play them as much as I can. 10 times last year. I want to play them even more times this year.
You had the 1 point loss in game four, which is a difficult. The whole situation was a little difficult. But if you win that game, you think you pull it off? You think you got them on the ropes? I mean, because that team can get nervous, man. They got a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, they do have a lot of pressure. And for me, I always think I'm going to win every game that I go into, you know, no matter what, and win it by 20 each game. I have a complete confidence in myself and this team and the coaching staff. So if we would have won that game, I think we would have scared everybody because nobody would want to see us after that. But, you know, that's in the past. We got to move on from that and try to get some wins this year and make it back to where we were last year.
The team looked great at the end of the year, a lot of chemistry, and then the whole basketball world of your league was just shocked by the tragic loss of Tyler Honeycutt. He was your roommate, right?
Right.
From what I understand. What was that? I mean, I don't want to take this down at all because we'll bring it back up again. But what was it like when you found out? How'd you find out? Where were you?
I was at my house. I woke up and I got a text message from Charles, and he told me, he's like, did you see what happened?
Charles Jenkins,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And he said, did you see what happened? And I said, no. And then at the same time, I got a text message from our assistant coach. And he said, tell me this is not true. And then I looked at it, and I didn't believe it at first. You know, it was one of those things where you're just like, from this guy? Like, no, like, you don't expect this. Like, such a great person, so much energy, bring light into every single room he goes into. And then you hear something like this, it's just, you don't believe it at all.
He was your roommate, right, last year during the
season?
Yeah,
he was my roommate.
And to put a little light on the whole thing, there's no light to really put on that, but from everything I heard about him and the people and his stories, and to know that you two are roommates, because he was a prankster also. The two of you together must have drove everybody on the team crazy, man. Y'all remember just messing with people left and right.
Well, the thing is, like, we're just two guys who are always in a good mood. You know, nothing can get us down. You know, good game, bad game, we're always going to be the same. And it was just, it was fun times. And you know, we had great conversations in the room, you know, always joking. And you know, the funny thing about him is he thought that he spoke every language that we were going into, like, the country. So, but all he would do is speak slower and, like, pronounce the word, like, terrible. But he thought, honestly, that
But was he speaking in English or was he trying to
Yeah, he was speaking in English. Like,
just, like,
all right, for example.
Doing it with, like, the Italian accent or?
Yeah, for example, the first time I ever went out to eat with him, he would take us. He took us to this wing spot because he obviously played in Kimchi before and he knew all the places to eat. And then he told us. We were trying to order, and then he was like, okay, don't worry, I got it. And then he's like, to go. And I'm like, I could have said that. Like, I'm like, you just said to go slow. That's all you said. Like,
he thinks he spoke Russian.
Yeah, he thought he spoke Russian, and he did stuff like that all the time. He's hilarious, man. And it's just, it's you know, one of those things where people say, you know, I don't mean to, like you said, damper the mood. But anytime I talk about him, you can't damper my mood when it comes to him, because I remember him as this light, you know, this positive light. And
that's a way to remember people.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, and it's and I don't see what happened. I mean, I acknowledge that it happened, but you know, I know that certain situations, you know, you got put in a situation where, you know, I don't know what happened exactly, but you know, I remember the Tyler for who he really was, and great man, and I respect him so much.
I mean, I obviously you probably heard a lot more things than I did. I read most of the things even over the summer when it first happened, and just to bring to light, you know, the conversation of depressions. A lot of people said that he was depressed at the time. And what you're telling me is what I've read from everybody else. It's like you never see it, you know. And it's such a difficult topic because if not too many people are going to show you depression,
right?
You know what I mean? And they're really struggling with things, especially a ball player,
right?
You know, we never want to show you know,
weakness, no weakness.
Yeah, yeah. Remember that old commercial? I don't know if you're old enough, man. Remember the Secret commercial, the deodorant commercial? Like, never let them see you sweat.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. You know, it's like that was always my philosophy. Yeah. It's like, you know, I hold it in and I won't ever tell anybody. And that's a serious issue.
Yeah.
And you know, like what you're sitting here telling me is like you never had any inkling, never idea that there was anything going on. It's crazy, man. It's like people don't see the signs and no one's going to tell you.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, especially, you know, for guys living in a different country, especially overseas basketball, there's no sort of, in the NBA you have like a regulations on mental health. There's people to talk to. There's nothing like that here. And it's already a challenge, you know, playing basketball and the pressures you deal with playing basketball. But then the fact that you have to go overseas and deal with the culture as well, being away from your family, you know, not being able to have your friends around and communicate with your friends. And it all just adds
hard,
up on
man.
People, man. It can become tough. And then it's just one of those things that, like you said, most people don't talk about the mental health aspect of it, and depression aspect of it, but it's real for sure.
I read that you had a tough time being sent down to Reno in the G League, but I also read that he was one of the guys that was excited to get up and go and see like kids at the Boys and Girls Clubs and the hospitals and the schools and everything else. Did you pick that up from him, or is that something you already had? Because I know that's what you're doing now in Kimchi. Was that something that he passed down to you? Is something you've already been doing, or just enhanced it a little bit?
Yeah, I've already been doing it for a long time. But you know, Tyler was one of those guys who just always wanted to make people smile. You know, just like I love to do. You know, for him, it was just great being around him because we had similar mindsets. You know, he always wanted to. Our first project that we did together at Kimchi was we both went to the mall and just talked to the fans and. Talk to the fans. No one really spoke English, but
well, he did. He just talked slower, right?
You know, he translated for me. But you know, it was just one of the things. We were similar mindsets, and it just worked out perfect that we were roommates as well. So
you young guys have some things in common with the older guys. You know, maybe like a coach that we've crossed paths with or whatever. But the only thing I got with you is the one team program. I hear you're big time in the one team program. I'm an ambassador. How awesome is that program, man? It's just so great, isn't it?
It's great, man. It's something that more guys need to do more. You know, it's like we have a pet. We're put up on this pedestal as basketball players, and it's our job, you know, to play basketball. But it's also our job to inspire people. It's also our job to take care of people who are less fortunate than us. And the One Team program does a great job of that. You know, they work with each individual team and doing something specific with each team and with each and within the community. So it's great, you know. But for me, I like to step outside of that. You know, it's good to do the One Team. It's good to have, you know, all the stuff in the lights and on the camera and everything like that. But there's more to it than that. There's more right. people out there that are hurting. So you have to step outside of that. And when the cameras aren't looking, you have to kind of step up then too.
It's incredible, man, because I can remember back in my days, and I get into it, but it's, you know, to see somebody like you doing the things that you're doing, like either on camera, behind the camera, even the One Team, there's not a lot of cameras around,
right.
You know, you're still doing things, but to be able to put that smile on those kids' faces, and everybody says that to me, but my answer is always like, you know, those kids don't know what kind of smile they put on my face later on, you know, when I go back home.
I just went to a homeless shelter maybe 2 weeks ago, and really? It was one of the situations where you go in like thinking like, I'm going to impact these people's lives. And that's not what happens. It's the opposite way, man. It's just like they impact my life way more than I feel like I'm doing anything for them. It's just like.
Yeah,
they,
but you are, you know, you are.
But it just feels like the opposite. You know, their spirit is still so high. They're like. I mean, you think that their situation, they're homeless, they don't have a lot worldly going for them, but their spirits are still so high. They're still trying to encourage you. They're still good people. And sometimes you just need to do stuff like that to put life into perspective. So
you got an incredible story, you know, a little paralysis at birth. Let's go. You know, you got your mom was diagnosed with cancer. You're recruited by South Carolina. The coach gets fired your freshman year. You failed a medical exam in Germany. I'm making it sound like you got a bad life because I'm looking at you like you got a great life. But these are things that could beat people down. These are things that could take people down. I know from everything I've seen and you and heard about you is you're a man of extreme faith. And is that what keeps you moving forward, keeps you positive? Is how much is that really involved in your life that it just keeps you going? Because these things could beat a lot of people down that ain't strong.
Yeah, it's 100% of my life. You know, my faith is... all that I really, you know, that really puts things into line, you know, is my faith, my family, and then everything else falls after that, you know. And for me, I wouldn't be where I am today without my faith, you know. Those things can take a toll on you, you know. The season that we're having this year could take a toll on somebody as far as not winning games or not being productive. But, you know, you just have to, like I said, put things in perspective. Like, in my faith, the what we look up to is ultimate sacrifice is the outsider looking in. This guy died on the cross for millions of people to come. And, you know, that's the way I live my life is I want to sacrifice for everybody else around me. Just like I want to do on the team. You know, I want to sacrifice for Alexei. I want to sacrifice for Malcolm Thomas. I want to sacrifice for my coach, which ultimately, you know, it works out in my favor in the end, you know, because I know that I'm doing my job as a human and as a person, and it really pays off. So
I'm sure waking up to that beautiful daughter every day makes you want to keep going too, doesn't it?
Yeah, man. She really puts things into perspective, especially when she wakes up early in the morning.
I was going to say, like, does she sleep at night?
She sleeps okay, but then sometimes, you know, I want to sleep in sometimes, and she wakes up and crawls over to the bed and just
man, you're on her
smacks
schedule.
You in the face. You're just like, what? Like, I love you, but... don't touch me like that.
Yeah,
exactly. She's great, man. It's just, even when she smacks you in the face, you're just like, how could I not? Like, how could I be mad at you? Like, you're unbelievable.
Oh, wait till they get older. You'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. I've been told that you were like in school. We're finishing up. Let's not get antsy. We're just about done. But you were like a pastor. You were like a psychiatrist. You're like a couples counselor. You had teammates and friends in Virginia that you led Bible studies on the road for the team. You were the guy that everyone looked to when everybody needed something. When you know, of course, you know, these pastors and rabbis and psychiatrists, no one goes to them when everything's good.
Right, yeah.
Everything goes to them when they're bad. What was that like? Because other than you're studying anthropology, you're playing for University of Virginia, which is a big time ACC school. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden you're taking on all these other roles. Everybody's coming to you for help and you're running Bible studies.
Yeah.
I feel like getting up and slapping you for making me feel so bad.
No, like I told you, man, we just have to do more in life. It's more than basketball. And a lot of people get caught up in that. No matter what your occupation is, they just get caught up in the daily grind or whatever, but you have to step outside of that and look and see, like, how can I impact the world, you know, and how can I make others better, and how can I make myself better, you know? My goal every day for myself is to better myself. You know, I don't want to be in the same place that I was yesterday. You know, in basketball, I always want to be the first person in the gym, last out. Not because I'm some prideful workout maniac or something like that. It's just that I want to be better than I was yesterday. You know, I want to be I've been blessed with these talents, and I just want to be good at them. You know, and the same thing with my life. You know, leading the Bible study is, I wanted to be the best human I could be, and I felt like that was one of the ways I can do it, was by helping other people and trying to show them the same faith that I had to have. So.
Now, doing Bible studies, you didn't have much time to hang out at night and go out with the boys. I heard you weren't much of a party guy.
No, I'm not. I have never been. I kind of get, like, uncomfortable in those situations.
You were the guy that chilled and listened to the players' stories the next day of practice?
Yeah. Well, they always come back and tell me the stories because they always, like, trying to get stuff off their chest or something like that. But, you know, I was the guy who was always, like, giving alternative ways to, like, go out and have fun.
So
you
went through the preacher role right there.
You're like, you know, like, we had a game coming up. You know, I didn't want everybody going out. You know, I would just kind of say, hey, let's go see this movie that's coming out and stuff like that. You know, kind of distract them.
Passive-aggressive
way. Yeah. So, I mean, no, I was definitely aggressive. There was some times where I was just like, somebody's at a bar or something like that. I knew we had a game. I would go to the bar and go get them and take them home. So it's just one of those things where.
So you went father mode too.
Yeah, I mean, I just went win mode. That's what it was. I'm just trying to win games.
That also gave you a lot of time while they were out to set up all your pranks, man, like taping up doors and all that other stuff.
When they came back, there was a lot of stuff going on, you know.
I love that.
Especially when they come back and they got a little stuff in their system, so they're not really aware of too much of what's going on. That was the perfect time.
It wasn't during the season, but I want to talk about the chick flick day. Someone told me about y'all had like a chick flick day where y'all went to Richmond in the back of your pickup truck and the flatbed and like
4th of July, man.
Yeah, there you go, watching the fireworks, lighting up the night, and y'all just laying there.
Man, it was romantic, man. That was no, it was one of those things where the girls came up with this crazy idea that, you know, we want to go watch the fireworks in Richmond. We want to go out to dinner as couples and shopping, and it was great.
Right out of a movie, man.
Right, like, out of a movie. I had a pickup truck, and everybody was just in the back.
I can't see you in a pickup truck, man.
I had the same pickup truck.
You still got it.
Not getting rid of it till it stops working on me, so...
What is it? What kind is it?
Chevy Silverado, 2010. Silverado,
yeah. 2010, okay. Yep. That's all right. That's not bad.
It's reliable, you know.
This was in college. I thought it might have been older.
No. Well, my wife's father runs a used car business.
Oh,
so,
okay. She got the deal.
Yeah, I got the hookup with that, and right. he kind of blessed me with that one.
Even though everything I got on you is good. I got nothing. I got no dirt. I got nothing bad on you, unfortunately. I wanted to throw something at you, but... I spoke with your boy Darian Atkins, who's an Israel player. Uh-huh. Now, I was going through some stories. I saw his name pop up in a couple of your stuff, and I was like, God, I got to get in touch with Darian. I was in Tel Aviv last week.
Okay.
We were trying to meet up, but we couldn't do it. It's your mic right now to say something back to him, man. I'm sure he's going to listen to this. He knows we're sitting here right now.
What did he say about me?
He said everything I've told you, the chick flick movie, the great guy.
Okay.
He said, I'll tell you what he said, which I thought was really special, was he felt that it was so cool and so great that you showed up at his wedding.
Mm.
He got married just recently and you were able to show up because he wasn't able to show up for years. And he said he still feels bad that he couldn't make it to yours, but... He's a great guy, man. He said, just had nothing but nice things to say about you. Unfortunately, I got nothing dirty on you, man.
Likewise. I mean, him, like, that was one of my guys who was, you know, living with me. And it was a situation where I wanted him to be at my wedding, of course, but, you know, he's a professional.
You had all your players in the wedding, right?
A lot of guys from Virginia, a lot of guys from high school, a lot of guys from growing up and stuff like that. But Darian's a great guy, man. He's married his high school sweetheart as well, which is great. And, you know, he's a clown, you know, like every time there's always a joke with him and it's always a good time with
him. It must have been like impossible to deal with, man.
We were serious, like when we had to be serious, but the coaches knew we were a handful, man. It was all of us together, Justin Anderson, Malcolm Brogdon, Mike Toby, all of us just, we were all clowns. So
yeah, I take a bunch of clowns like y'all. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, for sure. There's nothing wrong with that. I wondered, you got two teams in Moscow. You guys hang out? The Americans hang out?
No. I'm a competitor, so I can't live with myself if I'm going to
I like that.
Yeah.
I like
my
that.
Wife, she's a trader, though. So uh-oh. I'm going to tell the world she's a trader. She hangs out with the wives of the other Moscow team.
Yeah, but you know what? Happy wife.
Oh, happy life, for sure.
There you
for
go, sure. Man. She can do whatever she wants.
Exactly.
Before we go, I have two things I need to know from you. First, it's going to be almost impossible for you to help me out this one. I need some help. It's going to be almost impossible. Man, every time I see you got like this new fresh haircut, man. You got the ponytail going. You got the curl going. You got the little fade going on the side. I mean, I know I'm not going to get there.
Yeah.
But how the hell do you do it, man? Every time I see you, got something different going on.
It works out badly because I'm just lazy with my hair. And it just, like, I just got a haircut after 3 months just now. And luckily,
it looks that good.
Yeah. You know, like I told you at the beginning of the conversation, I'm a handsome guy. And I just, there's not much that can happen to me that would make me not a handsome guy. So, no.
I wish I had that problem.
No, the long hair, I don't think I'll ever have it back. It was just a hassle.
You had it like mohawked almost along with it. Was that your wedding?
Yeah, that was my wedding. Yeah.
What'd your wife think about that?
She loves me for me. And okay. She's all right with it. I tell her, I get mad at her because I'm like, you give me no tips on my style. Like, I need to know where I'm headed in life, and you're not telling me. Like, if I need a haircut, you need
to
tell me.
But if you're telling her the same thing you're telling me, then don't worry about it. I'm already good looking.
Yeah, that's the hard part. That's you guys are in a bad situation because you never know if I'm looking bad or good. So I'm always good. So that's the thing.
You got your haircut in Moscow, or did she cut it for you? How do you find a barber in Moscow?
In Moscow, they have good barbers.
Oh, do they?
There's a place that I go, and I can get pretty good haircuts there. So.
All right, good. Who hooked you up with that place?
I actually experimented.
Oh, you did?
First time I ever went. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look good no matter what, I guess you could tend to experiment.
And if I experimented in Turkey and I got a terrible haircut, I knew I could just at least experiment in Moscow. So.
But you're one of those guys that looks like if it goes bad, you just shave it all off and just start over again. The last one, I think with a little time and patience, I think you could help me with this. And I'm even willing to pay for this one, man. I need some serious help with my hashtag game, man.
You're
the hashtag man, dude.
Send me the picture you want to post. I'll send you the hashtag.
Is that going to cost me money?
No, it's free.
It's free?
Like I said, I'm trying to give back. So it's this free service from Anthony Gill.
I'm like this old ex-ball player, man. I try to throw cool hashtags on it. They're like, dude, it's over for you, man. Give
you
it up.
You just got to speak your mind. Like, hashtag whatever I'm feeling. That's all you got to do.
Look, man, I got to be honest with you. I mean, I'm jealous of you, dude. I'm jealous of you. I'm jealous about what you're all about. I mean, I wish I can go back, seriously, to my playing days and, like, learn. I'm being serious. Uh-huh. And learn from someone like you because I felt like I missed out on so much of that. In today's day with the one team and everything else I do, I feel like I'm trying to like get back all that time I lost, you know, of giving back. But you got it at 26, man. And that just makes you, to me, it's what you're all about. It's just a special thing. And I want to thank you so much for spending time with me and all our listeners on the Crossover, man. Wish you nothing but luck this season and luck for the rest of your life, man. This has been an incredible eye-opening conversation for me, and I hate being jealous of anybody, but I'm cheering for you 100%, man. I appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me, and it's an honor, like I said, and a blessing, and it's never too late to start giving, and that's what you're doing now, and I appreciate it, and no matter what, we're all blessed at the end, so just keep it in perspective.
There you go, man. I'm following you from now on. I'm following you on Instagram. I'm following
yes,
your footsteps.
Sir. Yes,
man.
Sir.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.